Okay, so it is May 6, 2017, and we're continuing in the triennial parashah this morning of Exodus 35 to 36, and the haftarah is Isaiah 58:13 and following. And let's open in prayer. Lord, thank you for bringing us to Nowakee Street this morning. Thank you that we could gather together among other followers of you. And thank you for your word. We ask that your Holy Spirit would be present in our discussions and our meeting and draw us closer to knowing you more. In your name we ask this. Jesus. Amen. So, our tradition normally is to read the parashah here, the triennial parashah. This is not the normal annual parashah, which is read through a year for the first five books. This is a parashah that is understood to have been read during the time of Jesus in the land here, about every 3 to 4 years. And so that means it slows down the reading of the first five books of Moses quite a bit. And there's different connections to the prophets in those more parashot.
Such a long chunk today compared to what we've been doing.
Yeah. And I'm going to do you the pleasure of not reading it today.
Yeah.
How many people read Exodus 35 to 36? So, okay. Gemma. Anybody who's here or who's going back to your homes, you can keep following with us. It's always on our website, narkis.org, and then afterwards there's a recording that's usually done if we don't mess it up. And but let's look at real quick. Let's just look at 35 and 36. What's the subject matter here?
Yes.
And. So if you have your Bibles open, Gemma, since you read it, anything you want to just say off the top of your head?
The thing that struck me all the way through was everyone who is willing to bring the Lord an offering. And it gets repeated at least three times. And combined with Bezalel and Oholiab, who are the guys who are making, decorating, setting up the tabernacle. He was filled with the Spirit of God, with wisdom and understanding and knowledge, with all kinds of skills. And it was the connection between these guys all getting skills, and everybody gets skills of one sort or another. There are skilled women who can spin, but it was all to do with their willingness to bring their skill to the Lord. And that was what really struck me.
Okay.
And I think it'd be the same thing.
So, I guess my initial question is there anything new in Exodus 35 and 36 from what we've already read in Exodus? For those who've been following along here for a while. Right, because Bezalel and was it Oholiab?
Oholiab?
Yeah. They appear earlier in chapter 31, right? Their story. I mean, they're mentioned. 35 goes into more depth, but remember, they're the ones who design the utensils and articles for the tabernacle and its structure. What else do we see in Exodus 35 here, after, besides them, we see materials for the tabernacle, right? Goes into all the different things that are made for the tabernacle. Is this new information?
Mm-mm.
No.
No.
Right? Exodus, kind of starting in, is it 25? Yeah, Exodus 25 talks about making the ark and the table of showbread, the menorah. The tabernacle is made in chapter 26. The burnt offering, the altar of the burnt offering is 27. the priestly garments are 28. So that's not new either. Then go to Exodus 36, right? That's our other chapter up here. It continues on with Bezalel and his gang. And then it goes into the tabernacle about, again, making how the tabernacle is going to be made. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is that these two chapters are a review of prior stuff in Exodus that we've already kind of gone over. So, what's new?
The uniform of the Aaron.
The what?
The uniform, the clothing of
Aaron.
Yeah, we already have that though.
Well,
in,
it has been mentioned, the clothing of Aaron.
Yeah, we've done
in Exodus 28, talks about the clothing of Aaron, the priest. I mean, I'm sure there's probably some little obscure little something, but overall, it's a summary, is what I'm trying to say. So that's our parasha, Exodus 35, 36, essentially a review. What we want to, I think, focus on this morning is the Haftarah, which is Isaiah 58, 13. So if we just go there real quick. Isaiah 58:13.
You know, what might tie you in, there's...
Well, we'll come back to it.
Oh, yeah, Exodus 35:4.
Yeah, we'll come back to it.
All right. The connection to creation.
Here, why don't you read it? Isaiah 58:13.
Okay.
14.
Isaiah 58:14.
13.
Oh, 13. Sorry. You must observe the Shabbat rather than doing anything you please on my holy day. You must look forward to the Shabbat and treat the Lord's holy day with respect. You must treat it with respect by refraining from your normal activities and by refraining from your selfish pursuits and from making business deals. Then you will find joy in your relationship to the Lord, and I will give you great prosperity and cause crops to grow on the land I gave to your ancestor Jacob. Know for certain that the Lord has spoken. Keep going, or is that...
No, I think that's it. I think, because if you look back at our parasha of Exodus 35 and verse 1, Moses assembled the whole community of the Israelites and said to them, these are the things that the Lord has commanded you to do. So this is the summary that I'm talking about. But the next two verses are this. In 6 days, work may be done. But on the seventh day, there must be a holy day for you, a Sabbath of complete rest to the Lord. Anyone who does work on it will be put to death. And then you must not kindle a fire in any of your homes on the Sabbath day. And so I think that's our immediate connection here in the text. This reading cycle that was put together was connecting Isaiah 58:13 to this beginning of Exodus 35 about the Sabbath day. Because it's interesting, you know, like we said, Exodus 35 and 36 is all about, it's like a review of building the tabernacle, the garments, the stuff inside of it. But it starts off with these two verses here connected to the Sabbath. Just kind of there, and then all of a sudden you get all of this other information summarizing building the tabernacle, building this. So I think the connection here is obviously Isaiah 58, 13, and 14 is the Sabbath, 6 days. So this is what I'd like to talk about this morning. And I know I'm opening up a can of worms, especially in Jerusalem, because, you know, everyone's got an opinion, just like, you know, in politics and, who makes the best hummus. Let's go for it.
Like the two restaurants in Abu Ghosh that compete against each other. No, one restaurant in Abu Ghosh competes with someone in Lebanon, right?
Right.
For who makes the biggest plate of hummus.
Right.
And as soon as Abu Ghosh set the world record, Then it was reset by the people in Lebanon.
Yeah.
You know what strikes me, that, Gary, is that Exodus is talking about the rules. You're to do this, this, this. You're not to do this, 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 this. Whereas Isaiah is talking about the joy of the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I sort of saw in it. You're to call it a delight, a holy day, honorable. You don't go your own way, but you'll find your joy in the Lord. I mean, that's a complete contrast, or not a contrast, but a
different side of the same coin, maybe.
That's right. Very well put. Yeah.
So let's start at the beginning. Where is the Sabbath up here? The Shabbat.
Genesis,
right? It's the first. I mean, the first commandment is reproduce and multiply, fill the earth. But as far as or at least from the Ten Commandments, you know, it's right there. It's the
framework of the first story, right? You have counts and days, and then it culminates on the seventh day.
I mean, you can almost say it's the whole framework for the Bible, the 7 days, because the writer wanted everyone to know that this is how the world was made, and this is how the world is,
how
it's organized and put together. And so, yeah, it's fascinating. So that's Genesis 2. You want to just go there? And it was said last night over, you know, your Shabbat meal as you get ready to break the bread and drink the wine. This is said every Erev Shabbat. Let's see here. Starting in verse 1, you know, on the heavens and the earth were finished with everything that was in them, completed. And the Lord finished his work on the seventh day.
That's Melacha.
Yeah, Melacha.
Should I write Melacha on the board?
Go for it. And he stopped working on the seventh day, all that he had been doing. And then here's the key verse. God blessed the seventh day and he made it holy. And you know, so you say these blessings on Shabbat. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu. So here you have this blessing that God actually blesses a day and he makes it holy. And everyone, you might know the word kadosh, right? Comes from the root here of vaykadesh oto. You know, God made it holy. And specifically because he stopped his work on that day. And you might have remembered the sermon from a couple weeks ago, the Hams who are living in Cameroon, and they talked about their work in Bible translation, and they brought up about the seven-day week is foreign to the people they're working with there in Africa because they have an eight-day traditional week. And there's other cultures that have, you know, 10 days, 11 days, 12 days. In the ancient Near East, in Syria, Babylon, it was different. And so we just don't realize, you know, how this little book, the Bible, has gone throughout the world. And now, mainly because Western culture has kind of set the secular business work day or work week. But that comes back to this. And it's not something that's been a part of every culture of every world since eternity. It started right here. And
other cultures that had longer weeks, days in the week, didn't necessarily have a rest day in there either.
Right, yeah.
Well, they had, like ancient Near East had taboo days where to do work would be unlucky. Like they would set out certain days. But yeah, it wasn't this concept of a cycle of 1 week.
It
normally follows the moon, like 2 week chunks, months.
Right, but their slaves would keep working.
There wasn't that concept of...
There wasn't it.
Have you all been to the Temple Mount, the Southern Wall steps there? It's called the Davidson Center. It's like a little museum right by the southern steps of the temple. And they have a movie there of what the temple might have looked like in the time of Jesus. And there's a guy who walks up and gives a sacrifice. Well, at the end of that little film, they don't give the quote where it's from, but it's somewhere in the Roman historians from that time period. The quote is something like, the visitor to Israel says, in this land of the Jews, there's three curious things. One, they have a sea that everything floats in it. Two,
the Dead Sea.
Yeah, the Dead Sea. Two, they have in their temple they have no images, mm-hmm. no faces,
no idols.
And so again, this is all things that obviously stand out from the rest of the world at that time. And the third is on one day of the week, no one works; that everything stops. It doesn't say in the thing, and I've tried to find it. So,
but the time of roughly
Jesus, yeah, Second Temple.
May I say something?
Sure.
In the past 2-3 weeks, watching the CNN, those American media, they were quoting a certain written material that there is a worldly power influencing the Israeli government to make the first day holy.
Sunday.
I think they were referring to the Pope's encyclical last year.
I pray that they fail.
Well, there is a pressure from the Israeli government.
No chance.
They will. Sooner or later,
it
will be adopted by the Israeli.
I don't think that will happen.
No.
No, I don't see that happening.
Well,
if they expand the weekend here, it will be expanded to Friday before it's ever expanded to Sunday.
Sunday.
No.
There is some
talk about
Sunday.
And
the prophecy.
It's not
going to
happen.
Denounce
that. They might want that, but I don't see it happening.
All the world
will
worship the beast. Who's the beast?
Or God Israel.
Well, let's keep the beast in his cage right now.
We need to focus on Shabbat today.
I've got just a very regular question. We've got Shabbat here. Is that the same spelling as Shabbat?
Yes. One is a verb and one is a noun. Cessation, you could say. Shabbat means cessation.
All right. I'm going to rein this back in. Here we go.
I've never seen that.
We know creation, and we know the Ten Commandments, right? Those are the two most famous things. But where is the Shabbat first instituted?
It was evening and morning the first day.
No, besides creation.
Yeah, it was a bad question. It's first instituted in creation, and we know about the Ten Commandments. But before the Ten Commandments, it's actually practiced in the people of Israel.
Oh, yeah.
What's the story?
The
manna. That's right. Exodus 16. If you go to Exodus 16, and we'll just skip most of the story, and let's start at 21. Exodus 16. We're going to start in 21. So they're gathering every morning to get their manna, and you know, you had to gather it before it would melt when the sun would come up. And on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much food as they normally did.
And it miraculously was preserved.
Yes.
Right. That's right. And so in verse 23, this is what the Lord has said. Tomorrow is a time where you stop working. And so whatever you want to bake, bake today. Whatever you want to boil, boil today. And then put that aside till the morning. So they did that, and it didn't go bad, like Sharon said. Verse 25, eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord, a Shabbat. Today you will not find it in the area. 6 days, so here's the verse, 26. 6 days you will gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will not be any. On the seventh day, some of the people went out to gather, and they found nothing. And so the Lord said to Moses, you know, why are you disobeying my commandments? Verse 29, the Lord is giving you the Shabbat, and that's why he's giving you food for 2 days on the sixth day. And let no one go out of his place on the seventh day. Verse 30, the people rested on the Shabbat, or they ceased on the seventh day. So Yom Shvi'i, not the actual word Shabbat in Hebrew.
But what... Sharon's just said, which I had never seen, that this word Shabbat means ceased.
Right.
Or to cease.
To stop.
Or to stop. And yet we've turned it into a noun, a festival, a sort of...
Well, there's the verb and the noun both there, right?
Yes. I'm not talking grammatically. I'm talking about the experience of... We talk about, well, what do you do to keep Shabbat? We don't understand it.
What do you not do to keep Shabbat?
It just means basically to rest, to cease from doing what you normally do.
Right. Right.
It's kind of...
This happened before the Ten Commandments were given to Moses.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't it kind of, though, what do you do different on Shabbat? How do you keep it differently? Not works, but how do you make it different? It's separated.
Well,
it's
that's, that comes
God.
To the Haftarah, really, which is about how do you make it holy and be beautiful. But I'm just thinking that I've never seen before that the word actually means cease. And that's the way you got it in Genesis 2.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
When I started studying Hebrew and looking at the grammatical, the difference between the verb and the noun. Because when I ran into it as a verb, it's like, huh? And it made a difference.
And the time of Jesus was about how to keep the Sabbath, the way to keep the Sabbath. But in the end times, the time of Jesus now, it's not the way to keep, it's the day. Wrong day. You know, at the time of Jesus, it was the wrong way to be there. But now, Christian churches everywhere, they are ignorant of the day itself. They substitute
okay.
the day,
so,
which will be enforced on the Israeli. The
I'm gonna rein it. I'm gonna rein it back in again. And I want to look at the Ten Commandments, what we call the Ten Commandments. In Hebrew, it's the ten words or the ten things. And everyone knows the Exodus 20 version quite well. Not everyone knows that actually Deuteronomy 5 also has a version of the Ten Commandments as well. And they're a little different. And probably most people don't know about Leviticus 19's version. And I want to just look at those real quick and compare them in relation to the Sabbath, the Shabbat. So let's go to Exodus 20. And we're going to read verse 8.
Are you going to come back to the creation theme again or not?
Well, of course. That's the whole basis of it.
Because I have a verse to read when you do.
From the Bible?
From Exodus 35.
Yeah. Exodus 35.
Exodus 36, actually.
36. Okay, we'll come back to it.
Okay.
So, Exodus 20, verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. In Hebrew, it's Zachor et Yom HaShabbat, which is our word for remember. And I'm just going to put that up here. So, remember.
And literally, if it's zachor, it's remembering.
Like, keep remembering, be remembering.
Yeah.
Continuative is what you're trying to say?
It's the infinitive, so it's a little bit more abstract than the direct command.
Okay.
But functionally, it's the same.
Yeah.
Functionally, it's a command.
Okay, so for 6 days, you may labor and do all your work. And this is malacha. Like Sharon has up here at the top. That's the word there. But the seventh day is a Shabbat to the Lord, your God, and on it you will not do any work. You, your son, your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, your cattle, the ger, which is the resident foreigner who is in your gates.
Ger-y.
That's right. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, and he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, The Lord blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy. What does that verse remind us of? Verse 11. What other verse does it remind us of? Back in Genesis 2. It's almost an exact quote. Very similar of those.
To bless it, make it holy.
To say that there was a morning and evening.
Yeah.
But this phrase doesn't appear in the...
On the seventh day, you're right. You're right.
No evening and no morning.
That's right. Yeah.
I didn't understand what you said.
That, you know, day one, there was evening and morning.
Right.
Day two, there was evening and morning. But on the Shabbat, on the seventh day in Genesis 2, it doesn't talk about evening and morning. There's
no
mention of it.
Oh.
That's what he was saying.
All right.
Okay. So, that's Exodus 20. Now, oh, by the way, what's the next commandment after the Shabbat commandment? Honor your mother and your father. And the word for that, you know where we get the word kavod from, which is like honor, glory. Anyways, it's kabed et avicha ve'et imecha. You know, honor your father and your mother. Anyways, just keep that there. Hold on. Let's just read these three first before we go off on little tangents. Go to Deuteronomy 5. Verse 12. Shmor et Yom HaShabbat. Be careful to observe the Shabbat. Or guard. Okay, so you notice there's a different word there in Deuteronomy. So this one is remember in Exodus, and in Deuteronomy it's like observe or guard.
And it's also there at shamor.
Which?
The same infinitive used as a
right.
As an imperative.
So be observing, be guarding. So how would you feel a difference here in understanding the two interpretations?
I would say Deuteronomy, in my opinion, feels much more active, like if it gives that sense of protect. In my mind, the only thing I'm thinking of is
like protect your children?
Yeah, or like even like let's say a married couple, like you're married, and so in some respects it's like, well, mission accomplished, but if you really want a healthy marriage, you actually still need to be very intentional about keeping this healthy and active.
Date night?
Yeah. And so there's like a sense of maybe you're tempted to let it go or be relaxed about it, but in order to keep it healthy, no, like we need to guard our relationship or be very intentional or active about protecting it and keeping it alive. Or that's what, I could be wrong, but that's what I'm thinking about.
No, it sounds great.
It also, Deuteronomy, to me, it makes me understand Jewish culture a little bit more in terms of like how they have all these books to guard their Sabbath. It's not like, well, let's remember it. It's like how do we guard it? How do we make rules to make sure that we protect it?
Yeah, they like the fence around the Torah concept. Mm-hmm. Has everybody heard that before? The fence around the Torah? So.
I haven't.
Oh, you haven't? Wait, so it's basically, it's kind of like what Jesus does in Matthew 5 and 6 and 7 when he's going through the different commandments. Like, you've heard, don't murder, you know, he quotes from Exodus 20, but he says, don't even be angry at your brother. And so that's the
kind of, leads to murder.
Because it leads to murder. And so that's building a fence before you actually get to the point of murdering your brother. Don't be angry, so... It can get crazy. You can have like five fences, you know, to where.
A fence of a fence of a fence.
It's like Fort Knox.
The principle of the fence is intrinsic in halakha, in Jewish law.
Sure.
Because for everything. You don't do this because. I mean, when it comes to food laws, when it comes to sexual laws, when you're allowed to sleep with your wife, whatever.
Right.
There's always a law that says, you know, you've got to wait 8 days before this or whatever.
And it can get ridiculous at
and
some point.
Well, I noticed in these, when we just read them, like Deuteronomy focuses on what you should do to guard the Shabbat and keep it holy. And Exodus kind of quotes loosely the creation. God set it apart and kept it holy.
So,
like it focuses on what God already
okay.
did. He's blessed this day,
so,
and now you can remember it and join
so,
into what
so,
God did.
Yeah, we should finish Deuteronomy first before we talk anymore because of what you're trying to say. So let's go back to Deuteronomy 5:13. You are to work and do all your tasks in 6 days, but the seventh day is the Shabbat of the Lord your God, and on that day you must not do any work. You, your son, your daughter, your male slave, your female slave, your ox, your donkey, any other animal, or foreigner lives with you. Right? So that's very similar to the Exodus 20. And the reason is so that your male and female slaves, like yourself, may have rest. Now that's new, or that's different. Why? Why should your slaves have rest? Verse 15. Recall that you were slaves in the land of Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there by strength and power. That is why the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Shabbat.
In verse 11, Exodus 20, it gives the reason why we should keep to remember the creation. And after that, this commandment, it says, honor thy father and mother, as if father and mother is procreator. They are joining God in creating children. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
We are partner with God.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're made in God's image.
Nice.
Good. So, what's the difference between Exodus and Deuteronomy? Exodus, you should keep the Shabbat because of creation. Deuteronomy says you should keep the Shabbat, but it's got a particular focus about why you should keep the Shabbat.
Because of the Exodus.
Because of the
Exodus. You were slaves, you know what it's like. God freed you.
Egypt, right? That this connection to slavery.
So it's still remembering. Remember where you've come from.
Sure.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, sure.
And verse 15 even uses that, and you will remember that
he
you were
not
slave.
Our creator, he is our redeemer as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's also a good way to look at it.
I like the end of verse 15, because it's because of this God commanded you to do the Shabbat.
Yeah.
Because you were slave.
La'asot et ha-shabbat.
Right,
it gives
right.
you a new verb, not just remember or observe, but do it.
And interestingly, you do talk about making Shabbat
mm-hmm.
in the Jewish world. You talk mm-hmm. about, you know, I can't come tonight. I've got to make Shabbat. Let's make Shabbat.
You got to do it.
There's something proactive in Deuteronomy 5, I think, about the Shabbat that, as we've been saying, like we're reproducing our father and mother. They produced us. You know, they were God used them to create. In a world where there was slavery, you know, your slaves are going to have a day off, and you're going to do something about it. So they have a Shabbat. It's very proactive, I think, of we start to take on God's characteristics as being, say, Redeemer, that was brought up. So. Yeah, there's a lot here that you can kind of go into. And if you read the whole book of Deuteronomy in general, Deuteronomy loves to talk about widows, orphans, aliens, and giving them benefits. It's very social justice oriented. There's been lots of books written on it.
I have a question. How come Christian churches don't realize these facts? And even one of the biggest shots, you know, he said the solution of the climate change is to keep Sunday.
Yeah,
how,
that.
How come? In this encyclical. How come?
I don't know.
And we still deceive, are we still deceived?
You know, it's a long history. It's a long history.
Well, maybe we'll end with that. That can be our final discussion.
Okay.
Let's look at Leviticus 19 now. The one that's not so familiar. This is the chapter that we get love your neighbor as yourself from, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, and it's not just Jesus. There's other rabbis in the time surrounding Jesus where they connect love your neighbor as yourself to the Shema, love the Lord your God with all your heart. Anyways, so this is like the holiness code here. And so Leviticus 19, verse 2. Speak to the whole congregation of the Israelites and tell them, you must be holy because I, the Lord your God, am holy. Each of you must respect his mother and his father, and you must keep my Shabbats.
So it's the reverse.
I am the Lord your God. So it's the reverse in the Ten Commandments. It's also a different verb. In Exodus and Deuteronomy, it talks about honoring your parents. Here it's talking more like fearing. The word, like, you know, you fear the Lord, or you... That kind of like holy reverence of someone. So, verse 4. And I'm just going to pick out some verses here. Do not turn to idols. You must not make for yourself... selves gods of cast metal. What's that remind us of?
Golden
calf. Well, golden calf, but first, in the Ten Commandments, the first commandment,
the commandment,
right? Don't make graven images, right? So that's part of the Ten Commandments. Then it talks about sacrifice offerings here, and then
harvest leaving
the edges of the field. Okay, verse 11. You must not steal. Okay, that's a Ten Commandment, right? You must not tell lies. You must not deal falsely with your fellow citizen. That also similar to like the Ninth and Ten Commandments there. You must not swear falsely in my name. Do not profane the name of the Lord your God. That's in the Ten Commandments. Verse 13, you must not oppress your neighbor or commit robbery against him. So again, that's the stealing part. Let's see what else. Look at verse 17. You must not hate your brother in your heart. Reminds us of Jesus, what we just brought up here, huh? Because it's funny, often people talk about Jesus kind of brought this new thing. And you can say he brought a certain type of understanding.
Quality, yeah, different quality to it.
But really, you can really take tons of his words, his teachings, and you can just go back and you can find a lot of the stuff in the text. It's pretty, in Leviticus, for instance. This is probably the least read book out of the entire Bible for evangelicals. So, let's see. Verse 18, you must not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the children of your people. And then here's the verse we all know, you must love your neighbor as yourself. So throughout this chapter of Leviticus, you've got a lot of things that are similar to the Ten Commandments. And so that's why I put it up here with Deuteronomy and Exodus regarding keeping the Shabbat. It's kind of there as a part of that whole tradition. So
it's interesting that the first two have got the Shabbat rulings or statements before honoring your father or mother, because in some way, in a modern Jewish setting, they're so intertwined. You know, the keeping of Shabbat, the making of Shabbat, the celebrating of Shabbat has to be done with honoring
family.
Not just the family, but the whole thing about the parents and the father is the head of the house, and so on and so on.
But in modern Israel, at least from what I know, that you always go to your family's house for Shabbat.
That's what I'm
but,
saying.
Yeah, so
exactly
like going to
you
the
go
parents,
to the family,
you know, right?
But it's the parents. It's the parents who are the family.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
And the family then honor the parent.
Yeah. So let's go back to our parasha, which we started in Exodus 35 in verse 2. In 6 days, work may be done, but on the seventh day, there must be a holy day for you, a Sabbath, a complete rest of the Lord. Anyone who does work on it will be put to death. Okay, did any of these Ten Commandments up here, did it say any type of punishment for not doing what it said, right?
But the guy who lit fires.
But there's a blessing for keeping.
Sure, there's a blessing. But here, it says kill. It says, you know, if someone breaks it, to that they must die.
Is the word, I've always understood that the word to be cut off and to die is more or less the same. And they talk about you will be cut off from your people, and there are
two different words.
Yeah. I mean, it's open to interpretation.
Right.
But certainly, if you're moving through the desert and you're cutting off from your people,
you're going to die.
You might die, because what are you going to do?
That's right.
But back here in Exodus 35, it says, anyone who does malacha on Shabbat will be put to death. And then the very next verse says, you must not kindle a fire in any of your homes on the Shabbat. So, that brings us to that famous story in Numbers, right? Mm-hmm. Numbers 15. Numbers 15, verse 32. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, he didn't even kindle a fire, the poor guy. Numbers 15.
Yeah, there's your fence. He was just gathering the wood. He wasn't kindling a fire yet.
Let's read it. When the Israelites were in the wilderness, they found a man gathering wood on the Shabbat. Those who found him gathering wood brought him to Moses and Aaron and the whole community. And they put him into custody because they didn't know what to do with him. There was no clear instruction about what should be done to him. Then the Lord said to Moses, the man must be surely, he must surely be put to death. The whole community must stone him with stones outside the camp. So the whole community took him outside the camp and they stoned him to death, just as the Lord commanded Moses. Whoa. And that's it. We got no other commentary. No one knows what his motives were. And you know, and to this day in rabbinic Judaism, this is why, you know, most Jews don't drive, because it's doing the...
Don't put gas on the... Don't cook.
Right, the spark plugs. They don't light the flame of the stove to keep it going.
Every time I read this, I think of the terrible story in Spain during the Inquisition, when Jews did not light fires on Shabbat, and the inquisitors would go around looking for houses where no smoke was coming out. And if there was no smoke coming out of their homes, by definition they were Jews, and they were...
That would be evidence.
That would be evidence, and they were taken.
But a bit of leaven leavens the whole loaf. That's going to be the lesson here. You know, if one does, if I set the example by my behavior, then I lead others with me, and that's how I, that's what it looks like to me.
I agree. I was thinking, because it's a group culture, that this individual took made his own decision. And so God didn't say to Moses and Aaron, take him away quietly and kill him. He said everybody participates and they all learn the lesson. So to me, God sacrificed one person for the sake of saving the whole.
And you go, if you carry on with that, Sarah, it's like, I mean, I was doing the parasha a couple of weeks ago, and it was like the stories of the fire that the two guys who lit fire they shouldn't have lit, and then Uzzo touches the donkeys, the oxen or whatever, carrying. It's basically, I'm going to do it my way, you know. Hey, come on, I'm not supposed to light fires, but gathering a bit of wood isn't going to kill anybody.
It's like a child, and you give the child I'm sorry to interrupt, but you tell the child, okay, this is what you can do, this is what you may not do. Well, can I go, what if I do it just a little bit? Can I do it a little bit more? And we're just like that. Push against the rules. Is that what you mean?
Again, it's kind of the fencer on the Torah.
Yeah, I think it's the fencing.
Yeah.
I think it's the
gathering of wood itself is not considered as work.
Well, apparently it is.
Is it because it might lead to the fire?
Well, that's one of the arguments. Is it a fence that he's gathering wood for a fire, and the fire, you're not supposed to have a fire, or you're not supposed to light a fire, So that's
just give me the text again for
Numbers 15. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's what I've got.
It's interesting 32. That the very next verses in 37 talk about making the tassels to remind you of all the commandments to keep them so that you don't just do your own thing, so that you don't follow after your own heart or mind.
And gathering wood was probably a lot of hard work. You know, you have a donkey, they aren't just, you don't have forests, you just go and you have this work.
Right. And see, now you're opening up Pandora's box of interpretation.
What's work?
Yeah, what is work? Because today, hopping in my car, is that really work? You know, am I going to sweat when I have air conditioning blasting? And so, things...
Well, and go back to the melacha. Well, that's what, I see connected very much.
Because you say melacha is something that makes you sweat, that causes...
Not necessarily.
No, but that was...
Melacha is work, craft, but it's also occupation. So it's back to this, what do you normally do throughout the week? You do your occupation, you take a break from that. Mm-hmm. So,
but gathering wood is not an occupation, that's survival.
Sure, sure, but it is part of your normal
routine,
workly stuff, yeah.
I mean, the guy who gathers wood, it's not picking up twigs, it's going out and maybe hacking it down, whatever. I mean, we're talking about,
but my point here is when you read the Ten Commandments, it doesn't tell you how to keep the Shabbat. It just says don't work.
That's right.
And so it's all open for interpretation. The only example that we have of what work is this poor guy who paid the price. That he obviously that you're not supposed to do that on Shabbat. But up until you get to Isaiah 58. You know, and Isaiah maybe 56, and some of the prophets are commenting on what Shabbat is and what it isn't. You kind of fill in the blanks, and that's what we all do. I mean, that's why we have this thing called theology for history, is people are constantly trying to come up with how do I interpret the text and apply it to my life. It's been going on forever, and it still is.
And back in our text in Exodus 35, our first in verse 2 and 3, you know, it says, keep it holy, it's a complete rest of the Lord. Anyone who does work on it will be put to death, and the very next thing, you must not kindle a fire.
Right.
So it seems like they're giving you a prominent example, either because you wouldn't intuitively have come up with that one, or because it's important, I don't know, but there it is, don't kindle a fire on the Shabbat.
Right. So as Jimma started off this morning, she was bringing up about how Isaiah 58 is talking about, you know, don't do something that's, you know, that Shabbat should be a pleasure. It's doing the Lord's kind of pleasure, his what he desires. Well, let's just read it just to remind ourselves. Isaiah 58:13. If you refrain from trampling on the Shabbat, from pursuing your own interest on my holy day, if you call the Shabbat a delight and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, and you see that word again, honor is the word that's used about honor your father and your mother from the Ten Commandments. So that's interesting. Seems Isaiah's got those two connected as well, those two commandments. Not going your own ways, or serving your own interests, or pursuing your own affairs.
I've got speaking idle words.
Yeah, that last verse there in Hebrew has been interpreted by different ways. In Hebrew, it's daber davar, you know, to speak a word. In the Greek, it says don't speak a word in anger. That's how the Septuagint has it. And so people are like, well, it doesn't mean that you're like a mute on Shabbat. That can't be that. And so they've tried to fill in that's what I'm trying to say about this whole interpretation, Pandora's box. Even here in Isaiah 58:13, what does it mean to not go my own way? What does it mean not to serve my own interest? What does that really mean? How do I interpret that? How do I understand that?
How do I work it out in my life?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how do I work that out in my life?
And it's really like Sarah was saying, it's the community has to work it out too.
They're the ones who are going to stone you if you get it wrong.
Well, you have to come up with something so that it isn't just your own way.
Sure.
You kind of all have to decide, you know, on something.
Like, you know,
no, because then it can then become very, very rigid.
It can.
and does.
Isn't that where the spirit of the law comes in, when you go to the priest and later the rabbi, and Jesus decided it was okay to heal the sick on the Sabbath? And
right.
They look to him as opposed to the individuals deciding.
Right.
You mean as authority?
Authority,
like the spiritual
authority.
Right, sure. That's always, I mean, that's why you got Moses here and Aaron kind of saying, okay, let's stone this guy. So, because God said, stone him. It wasn't just like, well, that's my opinion, let's stone him. Were you going to say something?
I don't know if it's a question or a statement. I'm not really sure, but in my mind, I'm just thinking, I know that this is one of the arguments I've heard then used for the whole reason for the oral law. Is because
yes.
God left gaps
yes.
yeah.
in the text.
Yes.
And whether the oral law came down to Moses on Sinai or not, I guess one of their main reasons is that, well, this is the supposed, at least agreed upon, group halakhic ruling on how we will then observe things. And so,
yeah.
like I said, I don't know if this is a question or a statement, but maybe question-wise, then, do you think that then gives any...
Well, what did Jesus tell Peter? He says, "I give you the keys of the kingdom. Whatever you decide, whatever you say yes is yes, and
whatever you permit is permitted.
Whatever
you
forbid
is forbidden is forbidden."
And that same idea is in rabbinic Judaism of what you're talking about with the oral Torah, that which is what you're talking about with spiritual authority, that it's coming from somewhere, that there is authority and there is leadership in how decisions are made. And so God has kind of empowered us through our leadership to make these decisions, because the world keeps changing. Our circumstances are not the same as they were in Exodus.
So it's
yes.
saying respect authority, that's how we should apply it to our lives. Because I'm like,
You're talking about interpreting the text?
Right. Well, because I'm like thinking, like, oh, okay, whatever you find, whatever you don't find. But then I was thinking about the verse, if your conscience is guilty about eating meat versus not eating unclean, so I'm like, oh, so it's based upon what you feel is right or not wrong. But
right.
I'm like, oh, no, it can't be, because this guy gathered sticks, he did his own thing, and then he got killed
right.
for it. You know,
yeah.
So then I'm like, okay, so then it's not about what I think, but whoever my authority is, like,
well, maybe it's both.
My church, or like,
maybe it's both.
Okay,
it has to be both.
Yeah.
I had a couple of thoughts. You know, when we talked about this man gathering wood, it made me go back to the first sacrifice. When Cain offered, his offering was not acceptable, but it was his heart.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't it all about his heart?
Well,
I mean, it might have been
well,
a sacrifice too, but it was the condition.
Well, right. Well, if you read the story, you go back and you read it,
yeah.
it's kind of vague why his sacrifice was rejected. And so over the years, interpreters have come up with what
reasons.
You just said, different reasons about why it was rejected. It was his heart. It was this. It was that. And so, sure. I mean, that's one way to look at it.
And then in Corinthians, when we're taught in the Brit Hadashah, that we are one body. We have fingers, we have toes, we have hands, we have legs, we're all one.
Right.
So as a community, we're all made to be temples of the Ruach Kodesh. We're all part of the body. So I think we need to seek the Lord together
sure.
and see how he would have us to understand, as opposed to going, I mean, I agree with God, the one who has wisdom, you know, the one
right.
who's a prophet, teaching, gifted, those things, but
yeah.
I don't think that there is
one
on
pope.
This earth, exactly, that is the authority.
So, you know, this is why there's the Protestant movement, because they didn't want the pope, but now we have thousands of authorities. And so we all get to lick from different flavors from the ice cream stand, depending on what we like that
I
week.
I was just saying, I was reading Corinthians. I'm not very good on the New Testament, but I happened to read 1 Corinthians this week. And I was just thinking about this food thing. And actually, it's very clear. You can basically eat anything, but you're not to upset somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get told this has been given to a dedicated to an idol or is halal meat or whatever, then you say no, then I don't. But basically, if you get frog's feet put in front of you by somebody who really wants to bless you, you better eat them.
Maybe.
You know what?
Or not.
Well, I think that meat question was meat that was edible.
For Christians, for God's people, to avoid the mark of the beast, is keep the commandments and have the faith of Jesus as it is in Revelation.
Wait, why
14,
why are you afraid of the beast?
Chapter 12. Revelation, yes.
Gotta get the beast in there.
14 and verse 12. We read verse 12.
What does it say?
The only, the only safeguard for us to avoid the mark of the beast, which will be imposed on everyone by civil law. Civil law.
So we need anarchy?
So how do we get to this?
We didn't.
We enforce you to accept the mark of the beast.
Right.
And the mark, who is the beast? Us. Who is the beast? And
no, but wait. What's this got to do with Shabbat?
Yeah.
Yes.
What?
I think the Sunday thing is partially connected to the imposed.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Now,
thanks.
The Supreme Court in America, they enforce the same-sex marriage. Don't
look. We don't have to bring in Supreme Court here. We're talking about Shabbat.
They impose Sunday law by accepting the Pope's policy.
Right, but no one's talking.
Right,
but no one's talking about the Pope.
His one would be healed.
Right.
I'm very smart.
And that's what Exodus 31 verse 12 to 17 says, that the Shabbat is an ot, it's a sign of God and Israel's covenant.
Right.
That's and that's why Jews today, rabbinic Jews, will say to Gentiles, do not keep this Shabbat, even if you think it's cool or whatever. You're not us. I'm telling you from their viewpoint that it is special. It's between us and God. And so we, you know, obviously you can appreciate it and you can do all this stuff, but as far as like the strict keeping of it, they would be like, you're not us. This is between us and God. And we've got to end now. And obviously we could talk about, well, what does this mean for Gentiles and Shabbat? And, you know, there was a movement in the 1800s in America called Sabbatarianism, where Protestants were going to start keeping the Shabbat, like Seventh Day Adventist, and there was before them it was Seventh Day Baptist, and so anyways, that's like a whole nother discussion which we can't go into, but I would like to end with just that idea that we brought up this morning of Isaiah 58, 13 and 14, to contemplate as we close, what does it mean to, you know, not follow our own ways, to refrain from our own interest, and whether that's in a spiritual sense, in the least amount, about keeping the Shabbat. I think that might be the connection here with the parasha that we have of Exodus 35 and Isaiah 58 of, you know, what is that delight? What is the Lord's delight? What is the Lord's desire? And end with that for today. So, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.